Welcome to the Futile Podcast. My name's Ian. I probably should be introducing myself. I'll start introducing myself. So I'm Ian, and Mark is here today. Say hello to the people on the internet, Mark.
Yo.
Mark says yo. If you want to subscribe to the podcast, you can search for us on iTunes. Maybe write us a review if you got some constructive criticism or you just want to say how awesome we are. Give us 5 stars and say these guys sitting down talking about movies.
Or 4 stars if that's your thing.
Yeah. I think it's out of 5, so I'm saying give us 5. Be, you know, say we're 100%.
Well, I thought you said most people don't do a 5-star system. Well, I figure you got to,
yeah,
you know, MacArthur, Ike, you know, you got to
get
in the circle.
iTunes does that,
circle
I guess.
Circle the wagons.
I don't know. Anyway, or you can send us emails at futilepodcast@gmail.com if you got any requests or anything. If you want to maybe do a podcast, I got Skype set up. I've been trying to do that a little bit more. So I can do them with people that are not in the same space with, which is kind of cool.
That could be interesting.
Yeah, I could like do one with like somebody from a different part of the world or something. If there was a particular movie that they felt they wanted Ian Strope's input on. So tonight is part 3. We're in the hump, if you will, of the Callahan arc. And this is Dirty Harry 3, The Enforcer. Note about the Callahan movies, they're not, like, subtitled. It's not Dirty Harry 1, Dirty Harry 2, Dirty Harry... They're each individual movies with an individual name that are about the same character and some of the other side characters in San Francisco, a police inspector, Harry Callahan. But, like, it seems like every movie is unique because the returning, like, creative force is never the same. Like, Ted Post directed Magnum Force, and Don Siegel directed Dirty Harry, and I forget the name of the guy. I don't recognize his name at all, though. Some guy I don't really recognize directed this one. But it was good. It was competently directed, and there was some interesting sort of uses of handheld, where you follow him into the liquor store and stuff, I think.
Each or not the liquor store. You definitely get a full dose of Harry Callahan, but they all have their own feel.
Exactly. And that's kind of cool. It's more like a serial story rather than like a trilogy or some kind of epic. It's not all one unit. Sometimes I like that. Sometimes I like one story that's very cohesive. But, I mean, I guess the only other thing you could compare this to is maybe like the Harry Potter movies where they get different directors. So they kind of have a different...
You mean Christopher Columbus didn't do them all?
No.
That's too bad.
No, they've gotten quite a handful of different directors. I've never seen any of them.
That's right. They had that guy that directed the Mexican teen sex movie.
Yeah, they've had. Yeah, they've had. Alfonso Cuarón, I think, directed one, and Guillermo del Toro or whatever directed one. I think. I don't really know much about them. I think that they do have sort of a continuous, like, arc, though. Like, there's building of the character and all that. But with these Callahan movies, it's really just, like, a cop story. 1976, the bicentennial of the United States. A lot of crazy stuff is going on.
Sexism is being battled.
Sexism is being battled. On the mean streets of San Francisco.
With Tyne Daly before she got fat.
All these issues are kind of coming to a boil. I mean, this is post-Vietnam, but you've still got the sort of militant civil action groups. You've got the civil rights stuff. You've got the women's rights stuff. You've got the gay rights stuff is starting to happen.
Gay,
like
Pink Panthers.
In San Francisco. A lot of this stuff is starting to happen. And and it's really not too big a deal in this movie. You do have the stuff with the feminism, with the woman, the idea of, you know, you're garnering more votes politically by bringing this woman into a higher position in the police department than she's necessarily qualified to be in. That's the Tyne Daly character who's going to be promoted from essentially being a desk jockey to an inspector before going through the proper procedure of, I guess, being a beat cop or I don't know whatever what else would
but
be.
But she holds her own.
She ends up being good, that's true. But that's not even really the issue. Callahan makes a good point of that. You know, you're kind of playing politics with stuff where in the real world, this is serious and people get killed if, you know, it doesn't
Politics kill people all the time.
Yeah, exactly. And we see that illustrated in this movie. And this is the first movie, I think. They've skirted around it before. Callahan is definitely the outlier. He doesn't really play by the rules and stuff. But in Magnum Force, you had the vigilante group where it kind of forced Callahan to be identifiable more as part of the system. You know, even though he's got that line, "I hate the goddamn system."
But until they make something better.
Exactly. And in this movie, really, the system is a big, not necessarily a big part of the problem, but you definitely see it being addressed more as this this force that's more of an obstacle towards Callahan, you know, administering proper justice. You've got this kind of dumbfounded mayor, and then Jerry Ford-esque, and then you've got the new captain, McKay, who's all about just political moves, and he makes his assumptions. And then you get that juxtaposed with the leader of this militant group, who ends up being sort of an informant and a helper to Callahan.
Ed Mustafa.
Yeah, Big Ed Mustafa.
Who was the pimp.
Oh, it was the same Magnum guy. Force, yeah.
And he was the bank robber from the one.
Yeah, so he's kind of...
had to know.
He keeps getting roles in these...
And he's going to be in number four, too.
Awesome. But he has a great line to Callahan where he's like, you know, the people you're working for, they're not going to let you through the front door, just like they won't let me through the front door. And then Callahan looks at him and says, I'm not doing it for them.
I would certainly hope not.
And, you know, that's the point, you know, because Callahan's a man of the people. And that's the real deal thing, you know? He does it for... He doesn't really know why he does it anymore, like he said in the first movie.
Just what else is he going to do?
It's just, what else is he going to do? This is what
Open
he is.
A bar?
Exactly.
Can you imagine Callahan in Key West? I mean, if you could morph the movies?
Geez. If you could turn Callahan in Running Scared or something? No, I like this one. It's got some good music. It's a little more... I don't know. It's kind of funky, too, but
It's got a great chase scene.
It's got some good chase scenes.
It goes through a porno. That's awesome.
Yeah, a foot chase.
70s full bush porno.
A foot chase. And you don't really see much. You see a couple of asses. And it's equal opportunity asses. I think you see more man ass than anything else. They were just like... It was all scattered. It was like a collection. It was an orgy. They were shooting an orgy with a bunch of people.
It was an orgy.
What else we got in this? Well, some serious stuff. DiGiorno...
Mr. Linguini.
Yeah, DiGiorno instant pizzas from the last two.
DiGiorgio.
Gets knifed in the back by a crazy San Quentin ex-con. Mitchell. Maxwell.
John Mitchell.
John Mitchell was the actor's name. Mitchum. John Mitchum.
Oh, John Mitchum.
John Mitchum was the actor who played DiGiorno. And so they waste him in the movie. It's crazy, but he's been in the last two as like a side character, a fellow cop to Harry, and then he actually dies in this, so it's kind of like a big deal, but it's not a super big deal. It's more realistic. It's like, yeah, people die. Callahan ends up with a new partner who's a woman, this female inspector who's a rookie pretty much, played by Tyne Daly.
And she can run the 113-something seconds.
13.5 in her gym shorts or whatever she said. And she asks Callahan, and he's like, beats me. Because he doesn't know. It's not relevant, necessarily. He's just trying to get the information.
I thought she played it pretty well.
Yeah, she did. She did right by it. It felt correct, you know? The way she behaved in the different circumstances she was in was kind of like, well, what choice did she have here or there? Or, you know, how would you have reacted if you were kind of green and didn't know what was going on? She actually did better than I expected.
I'm guessing a bunch of black guys wouldn't come on to me.
Probably not. But they weren't really doing that to her either. They were just kind of intimidating her for fun because they knew they could kind of get away with it. But, yeah, you get the foot chase and then you get the whole idea of... kind of this anger at the police.
Who has the anger?
Well, you've got the priest who's kind of harboring the terrorists that are really just... He's naive enough to think that they are freedom fighters. You know, they're the people's revolutionary whatever the hell they're called. And
Power of the People.
Power of the People. But they're really, it's the diehard thing. They're just
thieves. Because you realize a lot thieves. Of the members of this group are just in it for the money.
Well, they're all in it for the money. They're just thieves. They rob some armor depot, and then they use the weapons to hijack the city, and they kidnap the mayor, and which is a big deal. I felt plot wise that was pretty ballsy for them to go straight from. Like, they were in perfect position because they set off that bomb at, like, the bathroom of the police station and then started, you know, asking for money. And sort of before settling any of that, they go ahead and kidnap the mayor. Like, they kind of raise the stakes on themselves.
Well, I'm thinking Mickey was the brains of the operation and they lost her early on.
Yeah, Mickey the prostitute from the beginning. Yeah, it's possible. But that beginning is, it's a different beginning than the other two.
Yes, it is.
They've all had sort of their own opening. I mean, similar font and sort of the same kind of
this approach. This one is a little bit similar, more similar to...
to one, yeah.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't start with that sort of just hand holding a gun for well, 2 minutes
straight. I remember four now.
Well, we'll get to four when we get to four.
Started.
We'll get to four when we get to four.
Oh man, there's some great lines.
I imagine so. I'm waiting for it.
Four. I was thinking there isn't a catchphrase in Enforcer, but Sudden Impact Marvelous. Is just loaded with them.
Marvelous is the catchphrase for Enforcer. He says it a handful of times. But the way that it opens with those guys being kind of brutally just sort of murdered, it really puts you in a position to know that this is kind of serious stuff. That these kooks and these crazy thieves in the guise of hippie terrorist Power to the People are, you know, they're something to be, they're not like a force to be reckoned with like the Magnum Force guys where they were like sort of part of an institution and like, you know, they were ex-military and so in that sense you're scared of them because they're going to push
Bobby,
their fascist
a lot
agenda.
Of the guys in the Strike Force were
ex-military too, but they were also crazy batshit criminal psychopaths too.
Yeah, the old Bobby had some crazy eyes.
That's for sure. He did. And so it's a different kind of enemy for Callahan. I mean, in a weird way, it's kind of a combination of the first and second. You know, where you've got the craziness of, like, Scorpio mixed with, like, the sort of organized authoritarian, like, terror of the Magnum Force guys. But Callahan just does his thing, and he gets busted down big time by the new captain, McKay, and that sort of puts him in a position to kind of be working off the job. But that never really becomes too much of an issue. There's not too much more pressure on him by McKay. You just get that he's under suspension for a while. He's got a star. It's a 7-point suppository for McKay.
Which means?
He said, what are you saying that, McCallahan? I'm saying you can cram it up your ass.
Yep.
Good stuff. Callahan. Callahan is operating on all eight cylinders. Making things happen. I love the throwaway thing for this one is that these guys rob a liquor store. And so that Callahan walks in there without a gun. To talk to them, and they're like, oh, hey, pig, this is what we want. We want this, and we want like we want a car with a cop radio on it and everything. He's like, okay. So he goes back to his car and gets his gun, and then just drives the car right into the liquor store and shoots the guys. One of which he shoots in the back of the Nards, because the guy's running up the stairs, and he shoots him right then and there, French Connection style.
That would have been a real mess.
That would have been painful. But yeah, he shoots him French Connection style in the back. Like any respectable cop would, which is, you know, no shit from Callahan. He's just not going to take it.
Well, you can shoot someone in the back if they've shot at you.
I think that was the case.
Not if you're a civilian, per se.
Yeah, but that was the case. And so, yeah, I'm not saying, yeah, he was totally justified in what he did. And it ended up racking up like $14,000 in damages. Probably more today, of course. And they even mentioned that some of the... victims might sue the city and all another crap.
For excessive force.
Yeah. But for the most part, it's tried and true Callahan stuff. You know, you get at the ending, he kind of is just left on his own. And It's a little more bleak than... Well, I'm trying to think. They've all been kind of bleak.
The endings generally aren't very happy.
You know, it's like he, you know... He takes the bad guy down, but what is left for him is not like a celebration or anything pleasant. It's just sort of... And they do this with a similar style in all of them, even though they've had different directors. Is, you know, they just sort of pull back and they pull away and they sort of show him kind of lone in the desolate environment. It's usually a desolate environment. It's in the first one, it was just sort of that rock quarry. In the second one, it was a mothballed dock where, you know, they had like an old... what did we figure? It was an aircraft carrier?
That's what it looked like.
And in this one, it's Alcatraz.
Yep.
You know, old run-down Alcatraz. And
which really hadn't been closed for very long at that point.
Well, it sure looked dilapidated. You know, everything was rusted and...
Well, you leave something for 10 years.
Well, 10 years, I guess, is long enough then, don't you think?
A couple of years, it wouldn't be looking good.
That's true. I've seen that thing on the History Channel where they talk about, like, if there were no humans, how long it would take for the cities to look like, you know, craziness. But yeah, but this
build shit out of rock.
This one, for some reason, maybe it's because like you can start to feel it wearing on him a little bit. He's got more pressure from the politicians in this one, and there is this whole interjection of the militant groups, and there is this interjection of just general sort of like left wing hatred towards the pigs, towards the police department. And you've got the whole, you know, them trying to interject women into the department and, you know, for political purposes, that's sort of potentially kind of a dangerous thing at the time, you know, just sort of saying, hey, you don't have any experience, but you're a woman, so to try to garner more votes, we're going to throw you out there and you can do this, right? That said, she held her own and she did well, Tyne Daly did.
What I want to know is, was her character... In
Cagney and Lacey?
No, Judging Amy? Amy
with Amy Brenneman?
Yeah, was that like her character from Cagney and Lacey, old?
I don't think so. I think she was a social worker in that.
Oh, okay.
But a retired cop could be a social worker, I guess.
She was a cop in Cagney and Lacey?
Yeah, Cagney and Lacey was about two women cops.
Oh, I thought they were like prime investigators or something.
I don't think so. I think they were cops.
They were cops.
And they were on the beat. They were running. They were New York police detectives, I think.
New York police detectives. Mm-hmm.
I think New York. They might have been Chicago. I'm not sure. It's been a while since I saw it. But anyway, yeah. So Lacey is Callahan's partner, and she brings it to it and does that. She does real well by him. She runs after him.
Cagney?
After him?
Don't you mean Cagney?
So Cagney does well by Callahan as his partner, and tells him since he's been on suspension, she basically kind of, you know, shows that she's bucking the system too, and walks away from this thing that the mayor was going to do, this, you know, photo op bullshit thing, and tells Callahan, you know, I'm with you on this. If you need help, if you need some records or access to any stuff, since you're not officially with the department for the time being, I'm here to help you. It's kind of like you get a sense that they have an understanding, you know? Just like with Taggart and Foley in Beverly Hills Cop.
Except for Taggart and Foley were not going to fuck.
Well, I mean, they hinted some of that sort of stuff, but I guess...
It was going to happen. You were
pretty certain because of the whole innuendo stuff? Yeah, but they talk so. About it like while it they're the laughing 70s. At each other.
How could they not have sex?
When she does a little of that, and he kind of flirts with her a little too, but then when they're drinking the apple juice, he kind of tells her, he's like, look, you know, I don't get too friendly with my partners. And that's sort of like,
he got friendly with her anyway.
He did before that, but then he realized that if he was going to respect her and treat her as a real equal and as a partner, then that was going to, then their relationship was going to be that way. And that's where I think he kind of put the kibosh on all that. Because I think, honestly, if the idea was going to be for it to turn into some bullshit romance, which would be trite and stupid, then they would have just thrown it in. Because they had some of that in the second one where, you know, they had some of, not necessarily romance, but they had him with a woman in the second one. And they talked about his wife in the first one and all that. So I honestly feel like That scene where they're drinking the apple juice on the wharf or whatever was him basically telling her, look, I respect you as for what you're doing here, and I get that you'll be a good cop, and you're my partner now. that's the way it's we're going to be. And that's the kind of understanding we're going to have.
Well, there's really a romantic interest in all of them, except for one, and that's explained by the death of his wife. But in 2, 3, 4, and 5...
Well, I wouldn't doubt that they throw something, there's a romantic sprinkle something interest kind of in there.
In every one, and in this one, it was Tyne Daly.
I guess if you could say that, but I'm saying that I don't think... Maybe it would have been a Mulder-Scully thing if she had lived.
I'm not saying that... No, it would have happened.
I'm not saying it was going to happen in... No.
It would have happened eventually.
Maybe eventually. I'm not going to discount that. But I'm saying that what he does in the movie is he says... He gives her the impression that, like, you know what? Hey, we're not going to go out and have a couple beers and I'm going to hate fuck you right now.
It wouldn't have been any hate fuck.
Either way. He's basically
maybe she would have hate fucked him.
That's equal opportunity. I'm sure it's possible.
Yeah.
But what he's saying in the context of the movie is, look, at this point now, I'm accepting you as my partner. And so this is the way we're going to interact. And that's where I get from that. Now, that's not to say that after years of being a partner, they might eventually grow to have a certain affection and fondness, and it might be, I was saying, a Mulder-Scully thing where they eventually kind of get together eventually. But in the context of this movie, I don't see them giving you any clues that necessarily is going to be the next logical leap. Like, that after Alcatraz, if she hadn't gotten killed, spoiler alert, she gets killed. She gets wasted in this movie.
Wasted.
That they were going to go right back and hit Skins. I don't think that was going to happen.
What if she's...
I just don't get that thing. I don't get that feeling. The point being, this movie is almost more bleak because his partner gets explicitly wasted so close to the end, and you really didn't expect that to happen. I think in the first one, I didn't necessarily expect it to happen, and he gets kind of shot and gets injured but doesn't die. And then in the second one, I think that you really needed that to happen because it grounded... that the other guys who were cops, that the Magnum Force guys were, were off the ranch. Were off the reservation at that point.
And when you're killing cops.
When you're killing other cops. So, in a weird way, that particular cop, that one and his other friend, I mean, they killed a couple of cops that were his friends in that movie.
Sacrifices
had to be made, for sure. And in this one, it kind of comes out of left field. Like, you almost, because she's there at Alcatraz, she takes one of the bad guys down and gets the mayor and saves the day for a bit. And you kind of expect that it's going to just be like a paint by the numbers. They're going to get the last guy at the last second. And then that's going to be the end of that. And, they won't bother explaining why he has a different partner in the fourth one, because they never bother explaining any of that stuff. A couple years have passed and shit's happened. But instead... No, she gets a handful of bullets pumped into her. She should have been wearing a bulletproof vest. I mean, that's what I said was we're watching it when they're on their way to Alcatraz.
Bulletproof vest probably wouldn't have helped.
Those bullets are too strong? Or just would have broke her... She would have broke her rib cage up and been done for either
way?
No,
they're too small.
No. They are? They're too small?
They're very small in diameter. Yeah, which makes them a lot harder to stop.
Mm-hmm.
And they're really, really pointy. And they have a bad habit of fragmenting when they hit something. So they make a real mess.
Indeed. Well, it may have helped, it may not have helped. Who knows?
No.
So she was gone or no matter what.
Yeah, she would have been fine with a handgun.
That's true.
That's pretty much what... Well, with a full-on flak jacket, that might have worked. But the problem with those... Generally, is they have a bad habit of deflecting a bullet up. So it deflects up and goes right into your head.
It surprised me that they were willing to bring in the female cop and the whole address that issue of women's rights and then have her get killed off, too. On top of that, it's kind of like the ultimate equality there. It's like, yeah, you can be a cop and you can die like a cop. There you go. Everything's pretty much the way it is. And she died like admirably, I think. She kind of told him, go get him, there was no crying or whimpering.
But you see, there was a certain connection with the whole hand, never mind.
That was a partnership thing.
Yeah, sure was.
I didn't see
that from DiGiorgio. He grabbed the hand.
Yeah, he did.
And asked for his wife. Yeah. But he didn't, wistfully.
Well, him and DiGiorgio had known each other for a while, but were never really partners for that long.
Okay.
Either way, they weren't partners. Neither was Callahan and Lacey. But,
Cagney.
So, yeah, at the end, it's a sweet scene where he uses a rocket launcher and blows up part of Alcatraz, which was probably pretty hard for them to pull off. Like, yeah, we're going to blow up part of Alcatraz. Like, oh, it's historical money. They probably didn't give a shit about stuff like that back then. Huh? They're probably like, oh, great, fantastic. That's something we won't have to deal with later. You guys can handle it. But yeah, he takes not the main bad guy. There is no real main bad guy, which is one of the flaws
Bobby
in this.
Maxwell.
Is that the way it's organized is not such that, like, you can really identify. You do identify that one of these guys is the main crazy guy. You want him dead the most because, like, from the get-go, he's being the most brutal with stabbing people, and he stabbed DiGiorgio and stuff. Whoa, it's not
and the
nice.
Poor little old white-haired guy, that was nice.
Yeah, he stabbed the old security guard. Why the only guy guarding the armory was an old security guard. Yeah.
What do you have to say about the rubber dolly?
About the rubber dolly? Oh, when he went to the prostitution
and
thing?
What do you think about Ingrid's movie?
Ingrid's movie.
Anybody out there seen Ingrid's movie?
50
on 8mm?
Yeah, they came to Hollywood.
I don't think it was a snuff film.
They couldn't make ends meet, so they had to. Yeah, so they did explore some of that whole sex trade stuff.
Quite a bit, really.
And there, and Ben Callahan slapped a couple guys around to get some information he needed.
Who had connections with the syndicate?
Connection with the syndicate, and yeah, but the man, it's just like. The one thing these movies are doing, effectively, like, for me watching them, is, like, I'm getting the feeling of, like, how much more weary he gets each time. Because it's, like, it's not
he's
like...
He's getting older.
Yeah, he's getting older, but I mean, like, at a certain point, you know, you have one bad day, it's one thing. You have, like, two or three, it starts to wear on you a little more, you know? And this is, like, you know, a handful, another, and a large group of partners that have been killed.
Well,
and
you have a sandwich.
Annoying situations.
You have a couple of beers.
Yeah, sure
you
do.
You know, you wake
and you get up and you do
day.
It again. Because what you don't know why you do it, but you got nothing else to do. And that's the truth. But that still is that sort of Sisyphean struggle that Callahan goes through is what's so potent in the films, I think.
And what's his choice?
His choice is, just, like you said, you know, go home and have a couple beers and get up and do it again, you know, and deal with another asshole captain that's going to try and take his star when he does anything, and deal with another collection of dipshit, naive priests that are going to call him a pig and say that he's using excessive force and being brutal, and deal with a whole bunch of other different groups that he's trying to negotiate to get real criminals taken care of so that he can help the actual people. Even though most of the actual people probably agree that, you know, the police department is corrupt and nothing but pigs that work for the rich bourgeois or whatever. You know, the guys wouldn't even let him through the front door. It's a wearing thing. It's a thankless task. It's a Sisyphean situation that he's in. And you see that because they all
Sisyphus?
End. Yeah.
Oh, I thought you were talking about Sophie's Choice there for a second.
No, it's a Sisyphean. It's a Sisyphean situation that he's now. And so, yeah, I liked this one. I mean, I don't really feel at this point that... I think I like the second one a little better than the first, but I think I still gave it 4. And I like this one... It's a little shorter than the second one. It's a little more quick to what it's paced on. I think I'd give this one 3.5. It's not as good as the second one. And it's not necessarily as good as the first one, but it's pretty close. It's like... Really hard to, like, not give these all the same grade. But this one does have a few flaws.
What's the flaw?
Well, I mean, you never... The way these guys are organized, the terrorist group, you know, these thieves, the organization structure on them is so loose that it seems difficult to be believable that they would be able to pull off things like kidnapping the mayor and stuff. So it's just like... I think it's just that I'm more used to the Die Hard thing where, like, it's pretty clear that one guy's kind of in charge and, you know, you kind of can identify the main villain. Even in Magnum Force, they were all working for the lieutenant, right?
Yep, Brannigan.
Brannigan. And so that gives you one, like, head of the snake, if you will. And in this movie, you don't really get that. And so the ending is almost kind of anticlimactic. It's another cool situation, like the rock quarry and, like, the mothballed... aircraft carrier where it's on Alcatraz, but really they just show up and sort of eventually they pick these guys off, these bad guys off, and in no particular order almost. I mean, you do save the one that viscerally you feel is the worst, but you never got that he was like the main impetus for the most...
One of them survived.
For the terrible violence that it went on. Oh, the one that got captured?
Yep.
Yeah, that's true. The one he got earlier on. So, I mean, in that sense, it just, it feels like it's kind of, it kind of makes the ending anticlimactic in a weird way, because you're not really building towards him taking out this one guy that's like the mastermind that's really taking things on. And then big deal stuff is happening, but it happens sort of quick and kind of never really sinks in, like the kidnapping of the mayor, which is a really big deal. It's bigger than anything that's happened in the previous two films. In the first one, you had a serial killer terrorizing the city, which is a big deal. And the second one, you just had this sort of vigilante cop group that was really just blowing off other criminals. So, like, that was never really something that the mass populace of the city would be too terribly affected by or necessarily worried about. But then in this one, you have the mayor of the city, which kind of, like, all of a sudden, once that happens, it's like, oh, crap, that's kind of like the whole city. If the mayor is the most important person in the city, and he's now vulnerable to this. But you never... Also, never you never get like one more explosion from the terrorists. They didn't like blow up a bus stop or something else that would have just grounded in it that they meant business. Because instead, you get that they blow up this one bathroom and then kind of lay down demands and then keep raising the stakes on themselves by kidnapping the mayor and continuing their demands and all these other things. It feels like that part of the plot got left kind of thin and was never, I don't know, it wasn't viscerally tightened enough. I wanted one more explosion. I wanted to see those weapons that they stole get used to shoot, because that's some deadly stuff. Instead, it's kind of like they steal all those weapons and they use them to kidnap the mayor, but other than that, they never really use it to show how frightening the idea of those guys having those weapons actually is. You know what I mean? And so in that sense, that's sort of a flaw in the film. It's just, it makes for kind of an anticlimactic ending, which makes it sort of forgettable in some aspects. I mean, the reason you do remember this one is because it's the one where he has the female partner. It's the one where Cagney is running around with them.
Lacey.
And, I mean, I guess if you were like a good Callahan fan, you'd remember, oh, it's the one where he drives the car through the liquor store. It's the one where they bring the politics in a little more and that, you know, he bats heads with the politicians a little more. Though that was in the first one a decent bit too. I guess what I'm really waiting for is to see if they really kind of bring the syndicates and the politicians more into the mix in any of the future episodes as sort of the maybe the real antagonists and criminals in the story. But we'll see. That'll be 4 and possibly 5, and I have no idea where they go. And I don't want to be any spoilers from you at all. But yeah, I'd give it I'd give Enforcer a 3.5 out of 5.
I might give it a 4.
Excellent. So you're staying consistent with the 4s.
Yep.
That's good. I mean, it's still great fun. I mean, if you liked the first two, you're not going to dislike this one. I can't think of, like, something where it's like, oh, no, his behavior is totally different in this one. It's pretty much
the
same.
Callahan.
He's the same Callahan.
It's one of those constants you can count.
Yeah, exactly. And that's cool. It's constant, but, I mean, the director of the movies are changing, and the guys doing the soundtrack is changing. Things are similar, but not the same. The only thing that has been the same, though, is that the last three movies have all been made at the same time or something, like on a couple of sunny days in San Francisco, because it's always made San Francisco seems like such a like pleasant, weather-wise place, and so that's a funny little aside, I guess.
You should go vacation there.
I should go vacation there. We should all go vacation there. Now the Callahan's cleaned it up. We'll be right back. Maybe that's just your nature telling you that, though.
Could be. Should I fight it?
You should fight yourself.
Will Jesus still love me?
Nope.